we're going to talk about the issue of money in politics this hour with a former congressman from Wisconsin. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, August 12th. According to former Republican Congressman Tom Petri, gridlock in Washington would be a much smaller problem if members of Congress didn't spend hours a day fundraising. We will talk with Petri about what he calls the politics-first attitude plaguing Congress. And we'll also get him to weigh in on some of the political issues in the news these days. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions on the influence of money in politics and how to change it at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Tom Petri is a former longtime Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He is a member of the Reformers Caucus of Issue 1, which is a nonprofit dedicated to reducing the influence of money in politics. His column, Dialing for Dollars Causes Washington Dysfunction, ran in the Wisconsin State Journal last week, and we have posted that piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Congressman Petri, good morning.
Well, good morning, Joyce. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being with us. So you say a big reason there's so much gridlock in Congress, in Washington, is because members are spending too much time trying to raise money. Give us an idea of how much time that is and how big a problem that is.
Well, the estimates that we have, and the group I'm in is comprised of both Republican and Democratic former members of the House and Senate, and I think there are actually a few former governors, too, who are trying to come together across party lines to agree on solutions they would recommend to lessening the dependence on big money in American politics. And the system now is such that basically most members of the House in both parties spend an enormous amount of time on the telephone or at various fundraisers in Washington, raising money generally from various interest groups that have business before the committees on which they sit. It's not a healthy situation. I think the public's very aware of it, and that's why there was such one of the reasons there was such strong support on the Democratic side for Bernie Sanders. And on the Republican side, Donald Trump said, well, he's going to fund his own campaign. He's not going to rely on special interests. So I think that was one of the things that attracted people to both of the of those candidates.
Yeah, it seems so. But why do congressmen have to spend, you know, hours a day on the phone or schmoozing at events? Why do congressmen need so much money?
Well, in both parties, the way the system seems to have evolved during the years I was in Congress is that if you want to be a committee chairman or a subcommittee chairman, you want to rise in influence in the Congress. One of the ways that you can do that is by raising money for the Democratic or the Republican senatorial campaign committee. And they keep track of this sort of thing, and you're encouraged to raise money not only for your own campaign, but for the campaign of other people who are in your caucus around the country. And that takes a great deal of time, obviously, and it ends up, I think, being an unhealthy relationship between people of business before the committees in the Congress and the people who are sitting on those committees who are supposed to be representing the public interest.
Would you say that this fundraising is the biggest hurdle that stands in the way of actual governing, or is that a stretch?
It's a little bit of a stretch, but it's certainly one of the big factors. And we're struggling, I think, in the Congress and in a lot of other institutions to adapt to the changes that we've seen in technology and communications technology. I noticed at the beginning of your show, people can tweet and they can post things, and all kinds of we don't have just a few channels of communication anymore. People have a lot of ways of doing communicating, and as a result, the Congress is being watched much more closely by people of around the country, and if the people in the country are divided, the Congress is going to reflect that division, and because it's being watched so closely, it's very difficult for them to go through the various contortions that are required to eventually find common ground and move on to another issue.
You pointed out that in 2012, the average seat in the House cost $1.6 million, and in the Senate, $10.4 million. Holy cow. Therefore, members of Congress would have to spend half of their day calling donors or attending fundraisers. Was that your experience when you were serving?
Not certainly when I started. And really, during my years in Congress, in the 6th Congressional District, we did not spend very much money I spent a lot of time having town meetings and having meetings in the district and trying to be as available as I could. And it's that same thing is true down in, for instance, Jim Sessenbrenner's district. He doesn't raise very much money or spend very much money on his campaigns, and he never has. I did my best to be frugal with the money that we raised, but we did try to raise money to contribute to the party so that I could be chairman of the Highway Subcommittee in the House of Representatives, which certainly enabled me to help benefit transportation funding for the state of Wisconsin, which is my objective in that. But to be effective in the Congress, the dynamic that has emerged is that people end up having an opportunity to be more effective if they raise large amounts of money as a general rule.
Yeah, and as a result of all this time spent fundraising, you argue that a lot of work isn't getting done. But I'm wondering, even if fundraising, and by extension the time spent on fundraising, wasn't an issue, aren't there still a lot of Republicans and Democrats who are just so polarized that they won't compromise?
There may be a few, certainly in both parties, but I think if you go down the Wisconsin delegation or any state delegation, you'll discover that even if you disagree with them, you'll see many redeeming social qualities that they have, and that they have demonstrated the ability to work across party lines. That's certainly been true in my experience of watching. When Jim Sensenbrenner and I served he's been in Congress for well over 30 years. He's worked across party lines on a number of issues with people. Tammy Baldwin has a reputation for being a strong partisan for positions that she believes in, but she also works effectively with her colleagues in both political parties on issues that affect our state. And I think that as you go down the list, you'll see that that's the case. But doing that, it's the finding common ground, so to speak, doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of discussion. It takes a lot of listening. It takes getting some background on the issue that's involved, and so that you can actually come up with something that's a constructive solution. And if you're spending all of your time talking to potential contributors rather than working with your colleagues and staff people on the committees on which you serve and in the Congress, it's harder to do that, obviously.
Yeah. In your column, Dialing for Dollars Causes Washington Dysfunction, you mentioned that yet again, another year of gridlock in Washington, and you mentioned that this year the gridlock is over guns and Supreme Court nominees. Talk some about how the fundraising, the Dialing for Dollars, is causing gridlock over guns.
If the fact that you're spending time, as I said before, talking to potential donors rather than talking to your colleagues or others who are interested means that you are unable to spend time to get the background or to work on details of the issues that you might actually have reached some agreement on. In the past, there were bipartisan agreements in the gun area, and legislation hasn't passed. I think the major gun reform legislation that came out of the assassination attempt against Ronald Reagan and Jim Brady's near killing did pass on a bipartisan basis. It expired after a number of years. It didn't seem to have made a whole lot of difference, but at that time, people were able to sit down and do legislation in a politically sensitive area like that.
Let me jump in because we have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about dialing for dollars in Congress. First, the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about money in politics with a former congressman who says Congress members spend too much time fundraising. Tom Petri is our guest. He is a longtime Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He served for more than 30 years. He decided to retire a couple of years ago. He is now a member of the Reformers Caucus of Issue 1. That's a nonprofit dedicated to reducing the influence of money in politics. We are talking with him about his recent column that ran in the Wisconsin State Journal last week, Dialing for Dollars, Causes Washington Dysfunction. And we are welcoming your questions for him. What do you think is the cause of Washington gridlock? What do you think about the role of money in politics and how much money Congress members need to raise? What should we do about this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So just before our news break, Congressman Petri, I asked you about how the need of Congress members to fundraise was causing gridlock on an issue such as guns. And you mentioned that the time is not being used very wisely. For example, in your column, you criticized House Democrats for the 24-hour-plus-long sit-in on gun control after that Orlando shooting in June. And you thought that was a missed opportunity. Why is that?
Well, I guess if you think it's constructive to try to close the institution down, it's not a missed opportunity. But if you think that you're trying to discuss the issue and to develop background and some depth of understanding, it's a missed opportunity.
Right. I'm wondering, too, while you're talking about congressman fundraising, because of the cost of a seat in Congress, presumably. What about, though, the special interest money that goes into the coffers of various congressmen, maybe from a special interest group like the NRA? That certainly must play a part in that gridlock over the gun issue.
Well, over all kinds of issues. It sometimes plays a role in creating gridlock. I suppose sometimes people are contributing money, hoping to get things passed. But the point is that you're giving a disproportionate voice to a small number of people, and it's not based on the merits of the issue necessarily or the desires of the majority. And if you have a system of a democratic system that is open to a broad range of opinions and discussion and encouraging public participation, allowing a disproportionate role to large contributions from a few people undermines confidence and support in the system. And that's why former members who believe in the institution of the Congress from both political parties have joined together, some 150 of us, to see if there aren't common sense things, not necessarily broad simple solutions, but a variety of things that could be done in order to get the system to work again. Now, we've had a variety of legislation that's passed in the past to like McCain-Feingold, Russ Feingold from our state, and Senator John McCain is a bipartisan effort to make some changes that was set aside in part by the Supreme Court. But whatever you do, if you have whatever rules you have for contributions and so on, that doesn't amount to a whole lot if they're not enforced. And the Federal Election Commission, just like the Congress, has been locked in a gridlock and unable to function for a number of years. So one of the small solutions, if you want to say it, that the group has recommended is that the Congress sit down, look at the Federal Election Commission, see why we're wasting money in the sense that it's not doing anything because it's in gridlock, and see if there's some changes that could be made. And there's legislation that the group supports that would change it from where it's three representatives from each political party so that there's a tie every time to change it so that there are five members rather than six on the board, and one independent and two from each party to hopefully give it a greater chance of reaching enforcement decisions on the rules that we already have in place. There are just some small things like that that actually are pretty important to get the ball moving and get us out of this growing deadlock that we see. And I think that's why the public, people are excited. Look at the huge number of people who contributed enormous amounts of money and small contributions to Bernie Sanders, for example, who are very distressed with the fact that large money was coming from small sectors of the economy supporting other candidates in the Democratic race. And the same thing has been true on the Republican side with a little different version. So the group that it's the first time we've seen a bipartisan group work on this issue made up of people who have experience in politics from both political parties who will support things only that they can agree on across political parties. They've done polling, and one of their polls show that money in politics is one of the top five concerns of voting people, and over 70% to 80% of Republicans and Democrats, when polled, support bipartisan efforts to address the disproportionate and unbalancing role of money in politics. So, but this is something that shouldn't be swept under the carpet, and we're trying to get it on the national agenda and dealt with in a constructive way.
We are talking about the influence of money in politics and talking about how fundraising among Congress members is what our guest says one of the reasons why there is so much dysfunction and gridlock in Congress. And we're wondering if you agree or not. What solutions do you see? Is this a problem? What should be done about it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's go to Pat in Three Lakes. Hello, Pat.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Pat Volk, and I thank Mr. Ridby for being on your radio program because he is somebody. I used to be a very strong Republican. I don't vote Republican straight ticket anymore. I definitely vote for Mr. Ruby. But here's my problem. The state of Wisconsin and a lot of the states in the United States right now are being gerrymandered to death. And when they're gerrymandered, it allows the people that are either way over to the right or to the left to have a district that they are guaranteed. So they don't have to. Once they get into office and get into the caucus, they don't have to keep any of the promises they made. They don't have to go by the will of the people anymore. They go by the will of the party. The problem that we're going to have to face one of these days is that we're going to have to look at gerrymandering. To me, it's a tremendous disservice to the democracy in the United States of America, and it's something has to be done about it. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Pat. And our guest is is former Congressman Tom Petri. I think he heard Ruby, but Congressman Petri, it's related. He thinks that there's a lot of gridlock because of gerrymandering. Do you agree?
I think that that's been a contributing factor. The congressional and state legislative lines are drawn by the legislatures in each of the 50 states. And there have been efforts to deal with that in some of the states. Iowa has takes the approach where, rather than the legislature doing the redistricting, where they obviously have a big interest because it affects the districts that they're drawing for themselves and for members of Congress. They have a commission that attempts to be bipartisan to draw the district lines. That's been created a lot more competition for congressional seats and legislative seats in Iowa that might otherwise exist. California is pretty much moved toward being a one-party state, and they've made some changes in the way their primary process works so that they select the top two candidates in the primary regardless of party. So if this district is made a very heavily Republican or very heavily a Democrat, in the general election, you might end up having two Democrats running against each other or whatever, rather than it being automatically across parties. That enables it makes it easier for the broader people in the district to choose their representative rather than just a faction of one of the parties.
You know, we had a primary election, as you know, this week in Wisconsin, and I just wanted to get your take on a couple of the overall results. For example, there were primaries in a number of the congressional districts. We had Democrats and Republicans challenging incumbents. For example, Democrats Ron Kind and Gwen Moore and Republican Sean Duffy all won their primaries by pretty maybe huge margins. Throw in Paul Ryan into the mix as well. He was facing a primary challenger and won handily. So do you think people in Wisconsin are pretty happy with their incumbents?
That's what elections are all about. And if a person is doing a good job and seeks to have the opportunity again, they probably deserve to be reelected. Paul Ryan was had a primary. He did have a lot of people, I think, including Sarah Palin and a number of other sort of media type politicians, if you will, from around the country, come in and speak against him. And he ended up with 84%. You can't do much better than that in a regular election, I don't think, where there's any kind of competition at all. And we've had a vigorous race on the Republican side in the 8th district for Congress, and there will be two. That'll be very much in play this fall.
Let me jump in on that one because Republican Congressman Reed Ribble decided not to run for re-election, and so now that's an open seat. Three Republicans ran in Tuesday's primary. It was won by Marine Corps veteran Mike Gallagher, who tried to wear the political outsider badge during the campaign. But then one of his opponents said that he really wasn't a political outsider. State Senator Frank Lissay was second in that race with 20%. What stood out to you in that particular Republican primary?
Well, I think the people in the 8th congressional district, when it was going to be an open seat, looked very carefully at the candidates and they had a number of choices. I think they listened a lot to Reed Ribble. He's very highly respected up in that district. He supported Mike Gallagher. Gallagher had a distinguished career in the military and then as a congressional aide, I think, in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and advisor to candidates. And so he ended up impressing a lot of people and winning, even though he was running against an incumbent Republican state senator. We'll see what happens in the fall. It's going to be the 8th district has when it's in an open election, has often changed parties before settling down with a long, it usually ends up Republican after having a Democrat sometimes when it's open for a term or two. We'll see what happens this time.
Yeah. So do you think that Republicans down ballot, for instance, in the 8th, are going to be hurt by Donald Trump being at the top of the ticket?
Well, the last polls I've seen, and you would know more than I, Joyce, but it looks like right now Trump is only getting something like a third of the support of voters in our state. He's behind in almost every state in the country right now. And there's not a great deal of enthusiasm that I sense among most Democrats for their candidate either. But Trump is clearly not bringing strength to the Republican ticket at this point. Whether that changes, we've had several months. They say a day in politics is a long time. We're going to see a couple of debates between the candidates that are going to make a big difference. I kind of myself wish that if we had debates, it would be a three-way debate with the Libertarian candidates who are two former governors, Johnson and Wells from Massachusetts, and seem qualified people as well. The debates could be decisive. If Trump were to do very well in the debates, maybe that would change the picture considerably.
Yeah. The latest poll has Hillary Clinton up 15 percentage points over Trump among likely voters.
Yeah. Now, the last time this sort of thing happened was, that I can recall, it's happened somewhat in the Watergate year with Nixon being removed and Gerry Ford running, but it really happened in 1964 with Goldwater and Johnson, and that meant that, of course, there was a landslide for Johnson at the top of the ticket. But you ask down ticket, there were races all over the country where Republicans who didn't have much in the way of any opposition, but did have someone on the Democratic line on the ballot, ended up losing because the people just went and pulled the party lever for Johnson at the top of it and everyone else on the ticket, or a lot of Republicans stayed home, and that meant that people up and down the ticket were not able to get votes they otherwise would have. And there was a huge swing in the House and Senate and in a lot of state legislators and county offices up and down the ballot as a result.
Let me get a quick react from you before our news break. More than 70 Republicans have signed a letter urging RNC Chairman Reince Priebus to defund Trump, to not fund his campaign, but to fund the down-ballot races. Should he? Will he, do you think?
He's going to support the nominee of the convention, but there is still a question of how they allocate funds, and they're going to want to do it in a way that maximizes the chances for people up and down the Republican ticket. So I don't know what they're going to be doing, but I do know they've been waging a major effort to get small contributions, which have been fairly successful for Trump. I think they raised something like $78 or $80 million in the last reporting period, but Hillary's way ahead on the funding side, there's no question about it.
Let me jump in because we do have news next, and then we'll continue talking with former Republican Congressman Tom Petri. This is is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with former Republican U.S. Representative Tom Petrite from Fond du Lac. Tom Petrite represented Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District for more than 30 years before deciding to retire a couple of years ago. He is now involved in a nonprofit organization dedicated to reducing the influence of money in politics. He is with Reformers Caucus of Issue 1. And we are talking to him some about his column, Dialing for Dollars, Causes Washington Dysfunction, which ran in the Wisconsin State Journal last week, but also talking with him about some current political issues in the news on the campaign trail. We're welcoming your input, your questions and suggestions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mary in Eau Claire is with us. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Yes. Well, as I said, I'm 97 years old, and when I was young, only professional people went to Madison, and they were there for about 3 months in the summer, and the rest of the time they stayed home, earned a living, and going to Madison was the service that they gave, and they were not paid. They were professional people who knew what was really going on, and therefore they were informed and could judge what should be done. And
You think we should go back to that, Mary?
Don't you? Wouldn't it be wonderful not to have all these loafers sitting around in Madison? Have you ever been to the Capitol?
I have.
Have you seen them sitting around?
Well, Mary, though, you know, one of the arguments against having only professional people serving is that maybe a lot of, attorneys and businessmen, we'd have representing people. And we have a lot of, you know, farmers and factory workers and other people.
No, when I talk about profession, I meant my uncle was a pharmacist, and he knew what was going on in his community. He knew the sick, and he knew the needs of the people.
Yeah.
And that's what we really should see.
Well, what about that? And I think what Mary's getting at, Congressman Petrite, is that having people who are not full-time lawmakers, but they also have a life outside of legislating. What do you think of either a part-time legislature or, for that matter, Congress, something like that, that people wouldn't be, spending all their time raising money and then loafing around?
Well, I think it's a very good idea. We do have in Madison, and I think many other states, a number of people who are part-time legislators. One difficulty, it used to be, of course, the vast majority of people in the United States were farmers back in the 1800s, and people would do their farm work in the spring and summer and fall, and then they could, if they were elected, go to Madison in the winter, and it worked pretty well. And they had a chance where you're just kind of a lonely life in a way if you're out in the country as a farmer, plenty of time to, while you're plowing or doing this, to think about issues that are coming up before the legislature, and it changed the texture of the work that they did. When I served in the state Senate before being elected to Congress, I practiced law, but it doesn't, this sort of thing works with some professions and not so well with others. If someone's trying to be a teacher and a legislator, it's hard for them to be a full-time teacher. They maybe can do it for in the off session of the legislature for you know, half the school year, this kind of thing. But this works more easily with some professions than with others. That's been one of the problems.
Mary, thank you so much for calling. I love that Mary at 97 is still active in politics.
And she's keeping an eye on them, and that's good.
Yeah, let's go next to Ann in Green Bay. Hello, Ann.
Good morning. I'm just wondering if you're working on repealing Citizens United, and if you're not, why not? I'll take my answer off the air.
are, should we repeal Citizens United, Congressman Petry?
Well, the group is working on making a variety of changes with Citizens United, and that is certainly one of its long-term goals. But to say that there's nothing that can be done beyond repealing Citizens United, which involves a possible constitutional change and all the rest, is to ignore the fact that there are plenty of solutions that we could enact, even while Citizens United's on the books. And there are rules that could be enforced and should be enforced by the Federal Election Commission. The fact that they're not being enforced is being blamed on the Citizens United decision, when really the blame should be placed on the current Congress and on the Federal Election Commission for failing to enforce the rules that we already have.
William on Facebook says, besides needing Citizens United overturned, we need term limits on Congress. That would go a long way in breaking gridlock in D.C. What about term limits?
Well, I think we have term limits. If you look at the Constitution, it provides that no one can serve for more than 2 years in the House of Representatives. That's a term, unless the voters decide to hire them for another term. And in the Senate, it's six years. I thought the Founding Fathers were right in putting in term limits like that, so that people could only serve for a period of years, and then it's up to the voters to decide. But the term limits we pass do say that voters cannot elect anyone who runs. They can only elect people who haven't run before, or at least maybe haven't run in the last election. It depends on how they're doing it. If you do that, it sounds like it might be a solution, but I myself think you've got to have term limits on lobbyists. You have to have term limits on bureaucrats if you want to have term limits on those who are elected, whose job should be to watch the keep control of the situation. Otherwise, people are going to be new. The lobbyists will know, the bureaucrats will know they're going to be gone in 4 years because they're limited, and they will basically work around them and ignore them, and it will reduce the influence of the voter on the whole political process and on the government rather than improving the situation, in my view. Now, states have had term limits. California is one of them, and it's certainly not been a magic solution. If anything, it's caused more turmoil in California and resort to government by referendum.
Let's go to Elaine in Wautoma. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? You wanted to talk about Donald Trump?
Yes, yes, I did, because they keep saying Hillary's in the lead, and I don't believe that for a minute, because there's a lot of people like me, and I know a lot of people all over the country as well, who haven't voted in years, and Donald Trump actually is going to bring them out of the closet, and they can't possibly count all these people. They're so sick of the Democrats, and they're so sick of mainstream Republicans that Donald seems to be like the answer. And I think the election, you guys are in for a big surprise.
What do you like about Donald Trump, Elaine?
Okay, for one thing, he reminds me of my dad. My dad is not a politically correct person. I don't like politically correct people. They bring the country down. They make it so you can't say anything, you can't do anything, you can't discuss anything. I like the way Donald comes out and says things. A lot of people like that.
Thank you, Elaine. We are almost out of time, Tom Petry. What about Elaine saying, hey, maybe likely voters, is one thing, but the voters who are going to come out in droves haven't been counted in these polls?
Well, there's no question that Trump has got a huge turnout of people who had normally didn't vote or voted in the Democratic rather than in the Republican primary during the Republican primary process. Now we're in the general election process. It's a little different. It's conceivable that there could be that kind of thing, but he's been a very divisive candidate. Right now, the polls show he's only getting 1%. It's hard to get below 1%. That's impossible. Of the black vote, for example, very small of other votes. The country is a diverse country, and some of what he's been saying has not been uniting us. It's been dividing us and making it harder for people to bring us together and operate effectively. So we're electing the President of the United States, and that's a very serious thing. It's not someone who is just a mouthpiece on a TV show, and decisions have consequences. So I think as people sit down and think of what they're doing, it's going to be very hard for them to vote for the Trump that we've seen. Now, he may change. We have debates. There's no question that Hillary is not very popular either. But
let me ask you before we
have to be elected.
Before we run out of time, Congressman Pete Shribe, Reid Ribble was a congressman who said, "I am not going to support Donald Trump. I won't vote for him." What about you? Are you in the never Trump camp, or are you going to support the nominee of the Republican Party?
No, I'm more or less with Reid. I won't say never. That's a big word. I'm not very enthusiastic about Hillary, but I basically think that Susan Collins and a lot of other people who've worked in government who've been speaking out are right and trying to do the responsible thing. There's a lot of problems with the candidates of both political parties, but certainly I think there are more problems with Trump at this point.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Tom Petri, former longtime Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. We have his column, Dialing for Dollars Causes Washington Dysfunction, posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Congressman Petri is now a member of a group called Reformers Caucus of Issue 1, which is a nonprofit dedicated to reducing the influence of money in politics. Thanks to producers Bill Martins, Brianne Shasso, and Nyasia Ellison. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. It's the Week in Review coming up next. And Monday at this time, it's our State Capitol Report. We do have State Democratic Party Chair Martha Lanning scheduled to talk with us, and we are also working on lining up a Republican perspective. That's the State Capitol Report Monday at 7:00.